Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the United Malt Group trading update. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I'd now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mark Palmquist, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us on the conference call at a relatively short notice. I'm Mark Palmquist, CEO of United Malt, and I'm joined on the call by our CFO, Amy Spanning. You have seen an announcement we made to the ASX regarding an update on our trading conditions and guidance for the year. We're happy to take your questions at the end of the call. First, let me provide an overall context to today's announcement. We're seeing our key markets further reopen from COVID-related shutdowns. This is resulting in increased demand for malt in major brewing, craft, and distilling markets. So from a demand perspective, market conditions are largely in line with our expectations, and that gives us confidence for the future. This is particularly pronounced in our warehouse and distribution segment, where the return of craft brewing demand, together with our business optimization initiatives, are driving a double-digit increase in our underlying earnings for this segment. As I will detail in a moment, we are experiencing external issues on the supply side, which are mostly temporary and one-off in nature, and these are driving up input costs, particularly in barley, freight, and other inputs. The record decline in the total Canadian barley crop is a particular issue that's affecting us. The one-off costs associated with the significantly reduced barley crop in Canada and the timing delay in passing through cost increases to customers this year will impact our earnings for FY22. For the first half, we expect underlying EBITDA will be approximately $57 million before SAS costs subject to audit review. For the full year, we're expecting underlying EBITDA before SAS costs will be in the range of $115 to $140 million. That FY22 guidance includes the impact of $20 to $25 million of incremental costs resulting from the severe drought conditions in Canada, which I will talk about in a few moments. I want to stress the point that our underlying business continues to perform well. Our sales volumes will exceed last year and will not be far off of FY19. And those parts of our business, like warehouse and distribution, which has shorter cycles and greater ability to pass through cost increases more quickly, are performing well ahead of last year. Similarly, demand from distilling customers continues to be strong. Our plants are operating at close to full capacity, and of course, we are enhancing this capacity and expect the Inverness facility to be producing commercial quality malt in the fourth quarter of this calendar year. As I will explain in a moment, we are anticipating a more typical barley crop in Canada next year, as supported by the latest barley outlook from Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, and recent input cost increases will largely be passed through to customers over the course of the next 9 months. So we anticipate a meaningful increase in underlying EBITDA in FY23 and beyond. Let me provide additional context to the external challenges we are managing, which are impacting the FY22 result. As we have previously disclosed, Canada has experienced a severe drought with a 35% reduction in the total 2021 barley crop. Now let me put that into context. This will create the lowest barley carryout in Canada on record. And we are the largest buyer of malting quality barley in Canada. The drought has impacted the quality of domestic barley. Remember that barley is a perishable commodity, and the lower quality barley is degrading faster than a normal crop. That is leading to reduced yields and malt production because we have to use additional barley to produce the same quantity of malt for our customers. That is increasing our production costs. And expected additional costs to be $10 to $13 million in FY22, of which $5.5 million has been incurred in the first half. You will recall we previously advised that as a result of the drought, we're having to import barley from Australia and Denmark, which is also resulting in additional logistical costs. We now anticipate costs of $10 to $12 million for FY22, and this is in the range of our previous guidance. We are incurring these costs as part of our commitment to provide uninterrupted supply quality malt to our customers to allow them to continue producing food and beverage products. This is obviously having a financial impact this year, but we believe this will stand us in good stead with our customers over the long term. The combined impact of additional barley required to address reduced quality and yield and logistical costs for importing barley is expected to negatively affect FY22 EBITDA by $20 to $25 million. These increased costs are expected to be temporary. 2022 Canadian barley crop planting has commenced, and the Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada has issued its latest Canadian barley outlook, which is projecting at 10.6 million tons, which is 52% higher than 2021, assuming a return to normal weather conditions and trend yields. In our processing division, sales volumes for FY22 are expected to exceed FY21 levels and approach pre-COVID FY19 levels. This reflects the reopening of customer markets and increased consumer demand. However, we are managing short-term challenges in supply chain and inflation. At our annual general meeting in February, we called out the various supply disruption and delays in sea, rail, and road freight, which are impacting the business. These have deteriorated further since February, particularly as a result of the conflict in Ukraine and recent port shutdowns in China due to COVID restrictions. As a result, sales to customers in the first half have been slower than anticipated. And while we expect an improvement in the second half, we expect some of that volume will not be fully recovered over the course of the year. While FY22 volumes are lower than we hoped, the FY19 benchmark is clearly in sight. The net result is that we expect an FY22 EBITDA impact of delayed sales from supply chain disruption of approximately $8 million. Like all companies, we are incurring higher input costs along the full malt value chain, including inbound and outbound freight and energy costs. These increased input costs are expected to result in a net EBITDA impact of approximately $4 million in FY22. These recent cost escalations will be largely passed through to customers over the course of the next 9 months, reducing the impact into FY23. As I mentioned earlier, our warehouse and distribution segment is performing well. This business operates on a relatively short cycle and is able to pass through input cost increases to customers to maintain margins in an inflationary environment. We expect continued momentum in warehouse and distribution with underlying EBITDA for the first half 22 to be approximately 14% higher than the prior corresponding half. FY22 underlying EBITDA is expected to increase at a similar rate. You will recall that we have initiated our transformation program, which is targeting net annualized benefits of $30 million by FY24. We remain committed to achieving these benefits, but the recent tightening of the labor market means we have not been able to put the required resources against some of these projects this year, and has increased the cost of implementing the new technology platform. This has led to a delay of benefits that we expect to receive in FY22. Net transformation benefits of $4.5 million are expected to be delivered in FY22, and SaaS costs for the year are expected to be $3 million higher than previously estimated. And shifting to capital management. We're expecting gearing at 31 March 2022 to be approximately 3.2 times, and in the range of 2.5 to 3 times at 30 September 22. While this represents a temporary increase above our targeted range of 2 to 2.5 times, it is within our banking covenants, and gearing is expected to revert to the target range in FY23. We have no significant near-term refinancing commitments with long-term debt facilities not maturing until November 2024. So the balance sheet remains solid. We are continuing to manage these short-term challenges, but we remain focused on our long-term growth objectives. Since the demerger, our end markets have been disrupted by COVID and the more recent external challenges I highlighted earlier. However, as we emerge from these challenges, we have cause for optimism over the medium term, and we continue to put the necessary building blocks in place to deliver that recovery. Our warehouse and distribution segment optimization program is delivering expected benefits, generating revenue, and underlying earnings improvement, as I mentioned earlier. Our transformation program to create a simplified, more efficient, and effective organization is progressing, and we are committed to delivering that $30 million in annualized net benefits by FY24. We're also diversifying the mix of our base business, towards the key growth areas in distilling and warehouse and distribution. To support that diversification, we continue to progress the Scottish distilling expansion. The Inverness facility is expected to be producing commercial quality malt in the fourth quarter of this calendar year. We expect incremental EBITDA of approximately $18 million on a full-year run basis. The new capacity is largely committed under multi-year contracts, and we are confident in filling the remaining capacity profitably given the strong demand. We have enhanced our warehouse and distribution business with three warehouses operational in Mexico and a new company-operated facility in Derrimut, Victoria, now serving customers along the east coast of Australia. We are progressing our new specialty ingredient processing plant, supporting growing demand for new products and craft and food applications. In summary, we have seen a further impact of the external issues we called out at the AGM, particularly in the Canadian barley crop. These have been exacerbated by more recent events such as Ukraine conflict and port closures in China affecting freight routes. However, customer demand is back, and as these temporary supply factors affecting FY22 begin to roll off, together with the initiatives we're implementing to strengthen the competitiveness of our business, we anticipate a meaningful increase in underlying EBITDA in FY23 and beyond. Thanks again for joining the call. Amy and I are happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star two. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Apoorv Sehgal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark and Amy. Actually, can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you fine, Apoorv.
Brilliant. Okay. Maybe the first question, the $10 million-$13 million barley quality impact you're talking about, is that a cost that suddenly surprised you in the last 2 months since the AGM, or was it something that was sort of always expected to have an impact on the business with the Canada drought?
No, it's something that's pretty abnormal. In a normal year, we typically don't see any erosion or deterioration in quality through the year. This year, we started to see some erosion as we were working through the year, but the acceleration of that over the past, I'd say 8 to 10 weeks, has been fairly dramatic. That's where we're having to buy in some replacement barley to offset the inferior quality that we have. The biggest component of this that we're talking about is for us in barley is the ability for it to germinate. When it doesn't germinate at a high enough level, it's unusable for us in the production side of malt. That's what we've been having to replace here just in the last 8 to 10 weeks.
Okay, my next question is, I guess I just want to understand, like, to what extent these incremental costs in FY22 unwind into FY23. If I can break it down to the different sort of elements, I guess firstly, there's the barley quality impact, $10 million-$13 million. Secondly, you've got those additional freight costs of $10 million-$12 million. Thirdly, you've got those delayed sales. You called out $8 million from that. Fourthly, the energy/input cost incremental of $4 million. Fifth is the SaaS cost of $11 million in FY22. I know it's a bit of a long question, but those sort of five elements that are creating headwinds to the business in FY22, could you give some color on each of them into how we should think about the potential unwind in FY23?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll just start with the first two. In terms of the barley crop quality and the import costs, assuming that we get a more normal crop, which is the projections that we're getting out of the Canadian government, those will unwind in FY22. The timing of the new crop coming off is basically right at the end of our fiscal year. We don't anticipate any carry forward into FY23. The delayed volume is gonna be an issue around seeing improvement in the supply chain. One of the areas that has become particularly acute for us here since about mid-February is that we're seeing congestion and delays on rail equipment. which is how we provide the majority of the volume to our major producers or our major customers in North America. We're looking at what the congestion is and why it's being caused, and we have some optimism that that will be cleaned up sometime late spring, summer. But we don't anticipate that that would carry forward in FY23, so we would look for that to also disappear. The $4 million that's sitting in the inflation costs that we have the ability to pass back to our customers over 9 months really gets into how much of it happens in FY22 versus what the tail is in the FY23, if I understand your question correctly. A lot of our contracts actually run on calendar years. So contracts we have in place today would run until 31 December. And so there would be somewhat of a tail that would carry in FY23 approved. And then on the SAS issue, I'm just going to pass it over to Amy because she can answer that for us.
I sure can. So we had initially spoken to the SAS expense being $10 million for the fiscal year, and due to the issues that we are having around the skilled labor market, we have adjusted that to be an additional $3 million, so it's $13 million this year. But we still do anticipate that the FY23 will be the $4 million as we had put out previously.
Okay, that's clear. Maybe on that energy slash input cost of $4 million mark in FY22. So if I understand correctly, you're saying it's largely passed through, and so that impact hopefully partially reduces in FY23. But I guess what if energy costs stay elevated well into FY23 and you have to reprice those energy contracts? Like, is that still passed through? I guess I'm just wondering if that $4 million impact would be a number significantly higher in 23.
Yeah, we're not anticipating at this time. If I just break down a little bit on the energy costs, first, UK is where we're seeing the biggest impact inside of our financials. And a big portion of that really is around the time delay. We can pass through most of those today, but we pay for that energy up front when we're producing the malt. And then we get collection of that increased energy over time. So what I mean over time is we produce it, and then when we ship it, and then when we invoice it, that's when we first hit it. So just by the nature of the business, there's going to be a 60 to 90 day delay between the time that we collect it. So the hangover going to FY23 is really that where we've had to handle the expense of the energy up front, but we won't collect it until some of that we won't collect until we get into FY23. In regards to just energy costs in general, most of our costs sitting inside North America are annualized purchased energy, and a lot of the, for the natural gas, and the electricity sits under a regulated market that they have to apply for increases. And so that takes time to go through. So it's not an impact for us that much in FY22. It's really more about when we get into repricing contracts in FY23, where it reset barley price, transportation, and some of the other costs, we anticipate that we'll be able to pass most of that through. Australia, we are experiencing some increases going on there on the natural gas, but it's not a, what I call a material number. We don't anticipate that it will for FY22.
Thank you. Maybe one final question before I jump back in the queue. Just on the transformation benefits of $4.5 million in FY22. In FY23, what would you expect that number to be?
Yeah, the issue for us right now is solving the shortage of the skilled labor. So that is the task in front of us to get that solved in FY22 so that we don't run into delays in FY23. So that's I would just call as one of the top priorities we have that we're working on inside of the organization right now.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Wes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Grant Saligari from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thanks. Hi, Mark, Amy. Mark, Amy, could you please just talk or expand briefly on the typical contract duration with major customers and just your views on overall tightness of the malt market at the moment?
It's so our long-term agreements that we have in place are typically repriced on an annual basis. And again, they run on calendar terms, Grant. So the repricing on those will be effective on 1 January 2023. For non-LTA contracts, they're anywhere from 30-day windows, up to 6 to 9 month windows. So that's why when we talk about recovery over the next 9 months is we'll get recovery pretty quickly on those 30-day type of contracts. Fair amount of it is craft bulk business. And then it just slowly rolls out as those contracts are fulfilled. And then as they book new contracts, then we're able to roll those forward. So that's why it's kind of a cascading effect over the next 9 months. And I'm sorry, I missed your question you had about the barley or the malt.
And where do we sit at the moment in terms of malt supply and demand? Are we in a particularly tight market where when we come up to contract repricing, maltsters are going to have some level of pricing power? Or just interested in where we are in the malt pricing cycle?
Yeah, absolutely. So before the new crop comes off, the situation actually is going to get tight. For in some respects, a little bit obvious types of questions here is that we're, as an industry, having to import some barley. And so everyone's trying to run it as tight as they can before they get into the new crop, which would be coming in the latter part of September. So supplies are getting tight. The market's inverted. Both barley and malt is worth more in the present period of time until we get to the new crop. And then depending upon where the plants are located, it's inverted by $100 to $130 a ton difference. So that creates the economic incentive for everybody to run very tight inventories on barley, on malt, as well as our customers. So we're going to reach end of September, maybe even a little bit earlier, where it's going to be an extremely tight situation.
Mm. Okay. And just finally, just on the warehousing segment, the 14% you talked about, I think, was an EBITDA increase. I presume pricing has gone up. So where is the volume sitting in warehousing relative to, PCP or a 2019 type of benchmark?
Yeah, the volume's sitting pretty stable, Grant. So it's just a combination of improvement in margins. But it's not just on the sales price. It's also sitting on the optimization that we started working on over 2 years ago now. So we're really getting the benefits coming out of that as well. So it's a combination of both of those. So when we talk about the improvement in margin, I'm thinking more about on an EBITDA per ton basis.
Mm. All right. Thank you for the elaboration. Thank you.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Pabucky from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Good morning, team. Thanks for taking my questions. I've just got a couple related to demand. The first one is, how is demand tracking across your key regions? And then the second one is, everyone is dealing with higher input costs, including your customers across a range of factors. Do you think there's any meaningful risk that these inflationary factors could result in any demand destruction at the consumer end? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, David. And that is certainly something we're very sensitive to and watching. We've seen tremendous increases in malt prices, more than doubling from where we were a year ago. Today, the demand has actually been very good, and it's come back very strong. So, again, the issue in the marketplace today, and particularly for us, since we have so much of the Canadian market, is the supply. It's not the demand side. Where we're seeing good uptake in sales at these higher prices. We're seeing consumption of beer is going back up, and it's taking market share away from hard seltzers. And we're seeing the on-premise actually opening up and doing very well. So as of today at these prices, we're not seeing demand destruction. So at the moment here, we just keep focusing on what is the price elasticity of demand that sits inside the market. I think one of the reasons why we're not seeing it that much is that if I take a big brewer, the cost of malt in a can or bottle of beer sitting on the shelf is just a single-digit part of their production costs. There are other costs, distribution, transportation, packaging, are a substantially larger part of the cost of the beer. So I think in some respects we don't have that dramatic of an impact on that demand base. For a craft brewer sitting in a microbrew, his percentage base is a little bit higher than that. But with the tremendous increased costs in supply chains, they don't really have much of a supply chain. So they're not experiencing those type of cost structures that the larger brewers would be experiencing. So we're going to be sensitive to it and just keep watching it. But again, you know, our volumes are up in the processing side, and warehouse distribution is holding steady, which is interesting considering the Omicron aspect of things in the first quarter.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. I'll turn it over.
Thank you. Your next question comes from John Campbell from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Mark, just back to the transformation project or program, and you've given us pretty specific total EBITDA benefit, net benefits expected by FY24. Why can't you give us better clarity around FY23, around the pathway to that $30 million? It seems, since you've given so much certainty around that final figure, that you would have thought that FY23 shouldn't be a big ask to give a more specific figure for net benefits.
John, we're not really in a position to do it yet, and let me give you some reasons for that. It's not that the benefits aren't there. The reason that we downdrafted in FY22 is clearly because we did not have the high-skilled people capacity to run all of the different projects that we have in place that we anticipated we would run on transformation for FY22. So we had to make some decisions about the skilled people capacity we had in the organization. So we had to shift some over to the ERP because we wanted to make sure that we're not falling behind on that. And also to manage and optimize the logistics on the importation side, we used some of that resource as well. So 22 was pretty easy for us to really identify where we think it's going to come in. By pulling off those people and using them elsewhere for FY22, we could see which programs were not going to provide any benefit in FY22. So the challenge for us, and this is that high priority, is working hard to try to replace or fill in that deficit resource issue that we're dealing with in FY22. So that we're fully running when we get into FY23 and we'll either restart or expand some of the projects that we're working on in transformation. So I just need to see how well we do over the next 90 days and really filling that capacity. I'll give you an internal number here, just give you an idea of what we're dealing with here, is that we've lost net 17 people in the ERP program as an example. Being raided by other companies, some of them with change of lifestyle, and going back in and recruiting, finding that talent is difficult right now. And there's also, we're anticipating a little bit of loss of, you know, the knowledge aspect, where it's going to take us a little bit of time to get them up to speed. But that's the that's our challenge for the remaining of FY22.
Okay. Thanks for that. And am I right in inferring that your positive commentary around the Canadian, or I guess the North American barley crop, that you're confident you won't be importing in FY23? Is that correct?
Well, what we're saying is we think there'll be ample supply. One thing we've learned going through what we had to do this year, and as we're watching interior supply chain costs going up in North America, that there may be an element that makes sense economically for us to import. One of the advantages that we have is that we have capacity sitting over on the eastern seaboard, so that we can do a comparison between what is the supply chain cost from us pulling in product from Denmark or France, as an example, versus how much does it cost us to move it across from Alberta and Saskatchewan over to Montreal. But that would be an economic decision. If we get a normal crop, then there's, from a supply aspect, there's definitely ample tonnage to be able to handle what the malt industry would need for the coming year.
Okay, thanks very much. Just two other questions from me. One around the CapEx benefits. So you're continuing to be confident that 18 million is a good figure for FY23. That's a run rate by the end of FY23. Can you give us an indication of what you actually think the actual benefits for the FY23 fiscal year will be?
Yes, I sure can. So that 18 million is what we would expect for a full year run rate. And so as it takes a bit of time with commissioning to get up to full commercial ability, we anticipate that we'll get about 75% of those earnings in FY23.
75% of the 18, Amy?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And just last question from me, Mark. I think one of the things in the background that sort of concerns investors and analysts is that energy costs have, or energy per se has, all around the world has gone up very materially, and some of it is no doubt sort of temporary, driven by obvious factors, but gas pricing seems to have reached a new plateau, and at some point there's going to be a major repricing of I guess, all your gas supply contracts around the world. Can you just give us a feeling as to whether this should remain an issue of concern, or your confidence around your ability to fully pass through what might be some very material repricing?
Yeah, I think, John, that's a good question. So a lot of it depends upon how fast it accelerates. That's one of the issues that we're having this year, is that we saw energy and commodity prices accelerate in a very short period of time. So it creates a lag for us. So if the prices go up, going up higher is not necessarily something that's difficult for us to pass on. It's just it's the speed of when it passes on and when the increases happen. So our big contracts are annualized contracts. So we get one shot at them, pricing them. If 6 months later we all of a sudden get a big spike, then that gets to be problematic for us. So I think the best way I can answer your question is we're comfortable over time that we can pass these on, but a lot of it really matters on timing. So if I take this year as an example, is the big spike happened right after the start of the Ukrainian-Russian conflict that's going on. But energy prices were going up before that. And so we're having to price off most of that because the repricing was happening in January. It's that aspect of that spike that lately happened that really lit up natural gas prices in particular, but also in crude oil. And so that's where we get that lag effect that's taking us about 9 months to be able to pass it through. The only consideration I would have would be, the other consideration I should say, is if it becomes meaningfully higher,
I think back to the question David asked, I believe it was, is the higher prices going to affect demand? And I think that's an interesting question for us, because higher prices of energy overall is not a big impact for us, but it could be an impact for our consumer. And so then you just get concerned about, where they're spending their discretionary funds.
I mean, do you think, just as a follow-on question, definitely the last one, but do you think that it points to some weakness in the structure of the nature of your customer contracts, that it's obviously fair enough that you're responsible for delivering a quality malt to the specifications, but these unavoidable costs that seemingly can't be fully priced in, is there any ability to change the nature of contracting going forward, maybe move to 6-monthly rotations or repricings? Is there anything that can be done, or do we just have to accept that grain pricing and energy pricing is always going to be somewhat at risk of not full cost recovery?
Yeah, it's a very good point, John, and we've seen that in other industries. And as we're coming up on any renewals on the LTAs and the non-LTAs, we are changing some terms in our contract. But we're just living in a different place than where we've been living for the last 20 years. And so there has to be a sharing of some of that risk as circumstances have changed. And primarily talking about the inflationary costs from an energy and tightness in the supply chains. So it's a valid point and one that we are already working on.
Okay, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Ferrier from Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mark and Amy. Thanks for your time this morning. First question is around processing. First question is around the processing sales volumes. That's quite a good outcome you're talking to there. I guess if you didn't have the delayed sales, you're probably looking at processing sales volumes at or even maybe above 2019 levels. But my question is more around the mix. What are you seeing in terms of the mix, given that had a detrimental impact on segment earnings through FY20 and 21? Where is the mix now? The sales mix within the processing business relative to pre-COVID levels?
Yeah, James, we were watching improvement going on in that sales mix, or product mix is another way that I would describe that. We've seen it plateau here a little bit, and this may be a little bit of the sensitivity to the higher malt price. It also is a way for the craft guys to manage their inventories as well. So the expansion that we saw going on with craft producing more and more varieties of beer, that seems to have kind of plateaued here for the moment. We'll see if it still goes. The mix is lower than what we anticipated, but it has shown improvement, I'd say, over the past 18 months, where it looked like it was going to get back to what I call the more traditional levels by FY22. I'm not sure that's going to happen. We are tracking a little bit behind what we would have expected.
Yeah, okay. That's helpful. So would you say the product mix is sort of halfway back to where it was, or a quarter? If you could just give some sort of quantification, that would be helpful.
Yeah, we'll have to see how things go over the next three, 4 months. So what I can tell you is we don't think it's going to drift backwards. So the gains that we've gotten to this year in FY22, I would say it's probably just going to hold. So it's going to end up being less than what the mix was pre-COVID, but certainly better than FY20 and FY21.
Yeah, okay, understood. Second question is around the warehouse distribution contribution. I think it was Craig's question earlier. You mentioned that volumes are pretty stable. That seems a bit at odds with the processing segment seeing volume growth and a sort of a a reopening trade for on-premise craft brewers, microbreweries. So I'm somewhat surprised that you're not seeing volume growth in the warehouse and distribution business.
Yeah, we'll have to see where the year ends up. Again, we just want to be a little bit careful, just, you know, taking what we see and just running that same trend on a go-forward basis. The on-premise is opening up. There's no question about it. We're seeing good demand coming back on that side. I think there's still a little bit of hesitation on the craft side because opening up and then having to close back down again and open back up. But I think they're just more disciplined here. So it's possible we're seeing a lag on that. We may end up with volumes a little better than what we anticipate. But the way we look at it today, if they continue to run, if that marketplace continues to run at present levels, it's just going to be relatively flat at FY21.
Great. Okay. So really, when you're talking about FY22 expectations, you're talking about the benefit of pricing, the benefit of optimization, and if volume growth does emerge, then that would be upside to the guidance you've given.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Thirdly, the full year guidance, you've given a range there, a reasonably large range on the EBITDA guidance. Now, the Canadian drought impact accounts for a smallish part of that range. I'm just curious what other elements in that $115 to $140 million of underlying EBITDA, what other factors are contributing to quite a sizable range?
Yeah, I think the biggest factor for us gets into the external issues that we're dealing with. And the one that would impact us the most as we look at this is this delay that we're experiencing on supply chain logistics. It has a big impact on us in terms of how we recognize income by the time we get to 30 September. If the railroad situation doesn't improve, it means we will lag in shipments like we did in the first half, and that would have an impact on us on FY22. If it cleans up relatively quickly, so that we can, in essence, overship, then I feel much better, looking at the more of the top side of the range. We're getting down to a point where we believe that further deterioration that we saw in the first half, that risk is getting relatively smaller. We've got a higher percentage now of the imported barley, which there isn't any risk on that. It's very good quality. And so that starts to go away. So if we don't have further deterioration in quality, then we're feeling comfortable about not going to the low end of the range. Those would be really the two biggest issues that I would have. But I would say that the delay of shipment, which delays applying on sale, which delays the income recognition, that's the bigger issue. I know we're talking a lot about North America, but again, for UMG, I am concerned about what's going on in China. I am concerned about what the disruption that will do all over again into the container market. And that could have a knock-on effect for Canada and Australia, where we do most of our exports into the Asian market.
Yeah, okay. That's helpful, Mark. So that you quantified an $8 million impact in relation to that outbound logistics delays. In reality, there's a range around that $8 million that is driving the group earnings guidance range.
Yeah, we're looking at the $8 million and we're basically making some assumptions to forecast that out. And in that, what we see as the cadence happening today, we think it's probably going to stay that way. We're not anticipating any good improvement on supply chain when we talk about containers, particularly. We think what's going on in China is just going to continue the delays. We're experiencing 4+ weeks to get containers. Then the next risk is sits on getting a ride on the vessel. And it just is put a delay into that whole supply chain that we think will stay pretty much the same where it's at, even though we are starting to see some improvement just in the last month or so. That's disappeared very quickly.
Okay. And the last question, around the balance sheet and the gearing metrics that you've disclosed there, the malt inventory, I think the business ended FY21 at, I think it was $205 million malt barley inventory. Can you give us a bit of a sense around where that number might sit at the end of the first half, just because that's clearly a big component around why those leverage ratios have increased?
Yes, I can go ahead and take that. With regards to the amount of malt or barley that we actually have at the end of the first half, there has been a buildup in our North American locations as there has been those delayed shipments. But what compounds that even more is actually the value that is associated with those tons that we hold. And that has much to do with the calculation for that gearing.
Yep. Yeah, understood. And Amy, is there a number you can put around it just to help us isolate the increase in leverage ratio to that phenomenon you mentioned?
Well, there is the impact with regard to that, which we'll be able to go much more into detail when we do our half-year reporting. But the other element that is part of that gearing as well is the EBITDA element of that calculation.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I understand the question. So it's probably more for when we report the audit last half.
Yeah, when we get all of those numbers all completed.
Results. Yeah.
Correct.
Which are just a couple weeks away.
Yep.
No, that's good. Thanks, Amy. Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Mark Toppy from Select Equities. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning. It's just a question around the level of imports that you've put into the US market there. Can you give us some better understanding of the pricing? I would assume that the Australian barley, for instance, is cheaper than the US equivalent or the Canadian equivalent. Whereas the European product might be on similar par in terms of the price movements there, and just that expand on that comment in terms of being able to use some of that product going forward, given the Australian outlook for barley production is still pretty positive at this stage.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Mark. So barley in Australia is substantially cheaper than what it is in the US, but of course then we've got to pay for the ocean freight to take it all the way from Australia and through the Panama Canal and then up into the St. Lawrence Seaway. So by the time we go through all that, that's actually what we're looking at is saying, is there any way for us to buy it from anywhere else at any other price? And so you keep looking at all different places where the origination comes in. The first boat we brought in from Denmark, and then European prices were going up and Australian prices were going down. So then we shifted gears and then bought the remaining vessels that we're bringing in from Australia. So we'll keep looking at that. That's one of my previous comments was is that the way the supply chain cost interior is working out here and the elevated price just in barley, even for FY23, starts to create a potential opportunity for us to be importing some European barley into next year. It just really works out as much around what's happening with bulk vessel ocean freight as it does anything else, because we can start with a cheaper price sitting in Australia and very good quality anticipated. If bulk vessel ocean freight, for instance, drop between now and I would say the next 3 or 4 months, then it could very well be some importation coming out of Australia.
Right. And just a question on reference to the Mexican business, which you say is making pretty positive progress with the three warehouses. Can you tell us a little bit more about that progress there?
Yeah, we're getting the footprint down in Mexico, which is great. So our coverage is one warehouse on the Gulf Coast, so that's the east side. One relatively close to Mexico City, which is a primary, you know, population area, and then one over on the west coast, so on the Pacific side. So it gives us a pretty good breadth here in distribution. It also matches up well for where the craft growth is going into Mexico, because it follows down from the U.S., and in fact, a lot of the craft businesses down in Mexico were actually started up by North American brewers. So the east side fits well with all of the, I'll call the resort areas, sitting on the Gulf of Mexico. And then in the middle, running down Mexico City, but we have a lot of follow-through from Texas craft brewers, as an example, following the way down through there. And then on the West Coast, you're getting a lot of it that's just falling down from Los Angeles, San Diego. So that's where we really find where the benefits come in on that. The growth in that marketplace has recovered well from COVID. And also, I should mention that one of the reasons for expanding the warehouses down there is that those brewers are becoming much more sophisticated. So they're looking for a much greater array of products to produce, you know, different varieties of beer. And they're also looking for better quality, which really fits in well for us on the big business.
Right. And lastly, it seems some pickup in demand for premium spirits. You sound quite positive about the outlook for the Scotch market and your positioning there. Can you tell us in the short term, or I appreciate it's a long-term sort of game in terms of putting down Scotch, but the fundamentals of the market, how are you seeing that?
Yeah, we continue to see them to be very good, and we've had some nice developments here over the past year. There's been some of the tariffs have come off, for instance, that was happening between the EU and the US. And so that's making Scotch whiskeys much more competitive in the American marketplace. That's good to see. We were also being able to, as we talked to our distillers, that they were getting more comfortable about China. We're obviously having a hiccup here with the COVID going on there, but, you know, distillers aren't short-term decision makers. And so they still feel relatively good about their marketplace. They still have some more capacity going up in distilleries. And so it's a strong market. I would also add is that we are seeing distilling in North America growing, a lot of boutique distillers, which, is also giving us some opportunities here in Canada and the U.S. as well.
Great. Okay. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question is a follow-up question from Apoor Sehgal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the follow-up from me. Just firstly, I just wanted to check I'm thinking about it the right way in the energy cost side of things. The $4 million impact in FY22, I'm just wondering, how is it so small? Like, if I understand it correctly, you're saying you repriced it initially on the 1st of January and energy costs were going up until that date, but clearly there's been a step up in the last couple of months, and you're saying your next reprice is on 1st of January 2023. But if you're copying sort of higher energy costs now, and given how naturally energy-intensive your business is, I'm just wondering, like, how is it only $4 million? I just would have thought it might be a number a lot more than that.
Yeah, so a lot of our energy costs are locked for 22. So we would have typically annual contracts on the price. So we're not being impacted near as much as what you're seeing going on in the marketplace. the concerns is when we come into the end of 22, and then we've got to reprice some of those annual contracts, is having that price be a well-established price for the full year. So what we've experienced in the high increases in natural gas prices doesn't have a big impact on us. It's primarily UK because we've got CPI indexing that goes on in there, and we also have hedges against some of our supplies. So it just takes a while to get that charged out to the customer at shipment time. In the U.S., most of what we've got in natural gas, we buy what are referred to as strips. And so those strips stay constant at that price for the period of time. We've got a little bit more volatility in Australia because some strips are coming off at different times. And so we see a little bit more going on there. So we're not feeling that big impact on natural gas and electricity yet. And we are feeling it when it comes to transportation. We are seeing it in fuel surcharges that are going in on both rail and trucks. So that's where we feel more of the big increase going on in energy prices at this point in time.
Got it. Okay, thank you. And then there's a question on CapEx. In the release, you're saying 55 to 60 mil. Is it in total over the next few years, including 30 to 35 mil of maintenance CapEx? Is that right?
That is correct. That is the stay in business and then having the ability to have some smaller either business improvement or sustainability-focused projects.
So it's kind of implied 25 mil per annum of growth CapEx? And what does that growth CapEx actually relate to?
So it will be based on, we have a number of facilities that we may have some smaller projects that are associated with being able to reduce water uses of energy, having various efficiencies in our plants around the world. So we're coming off of the higher program that we've had as we're completing many of the larger projects that we have started over the last 18 to 24 months, getting down to a more stable or more normal cadence for the business going forward.
A program that I'd refer to more like a base capital program. So it's not incorporating any major growth projects, anything like that. Mm-hmm. Not to say that there wouldn't be some small projects that would add some marginal capacity, whatever, but that's that $25 million is any improvements that meets our hurdle rates. That's where the spend could go. So to Amy's point, some of it is just finding improvements in operation that's both a benefit for sustainability issues as well as lowering costs. Some of it may be tweaking some areas where we can very cheaply add on some minor levels of capacity. That's mainly what we're looking at the base capital. We really want to concentrate on bedding down the capital programs that we have been spending on over the past 2-3 years, and really improve the returns on capital on those.
Okay. Yep. Sure. And then, just on the credit, what's the credit quality like of your customers, particularly in craft? I'm just wondering if any additional provisions might need to be booked at the first half results.
No, actually, the credit with our customers continues to go along very well. We haven't seen any deterioration in our debtors book.
Okay, that's good. One final question, if I can. Just a follow-up on the demand side questions before. If it wasn't for those delayed sales you talked about, would your volumes be in line with FY19 levels?
Yeah, again, we were anticipating that we were going to get there. So the delayed shipments in the first half has, in essence, another way to look at it is it actually destroys some of the available capacity because we can't fill it. And what I mean by that is that with the shipment delays, we had to slow down some of the plants because we're getting full on malt inventories. If we could have shipped those out in the first half, that would have created abilities for us to produce more inventories, because seasonally we typically do overship in the second half. So we try to produce inventories to a level that will meet the needs seasonally. And that's where we have some restrictions this year.
Right. So for full year 22, you might have actually been above pre-COVID levels if the supply chain stuff was intact.
Well, if you go back and say if that was the only issue, then yeah, it works out to where we would have had confidence. That's why we said that in the annual general meeting, because we weren't anticipating the interior supply chain issues, primarily rail, that was going to have us under ship for the half year.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks, guys.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Palmquist for closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you very much. And again, I really appreciate you all taking time. I know that this Monday in particular is probably a pretty busy Monday, so I appreciate you getting on with us. But I just wanted to just close by saying that, again, a lot of the impact that we're having in FY22 is the external factors. You know, the good news is we really are seeing demand pick up. We are seeing a lot of the programs we're working to, and you can really see it in warehouse and distribution, that we are getting the benefits out of these programs. So we definitely believe we're well set up. If a lot of these external factors stabilize or go away, that sets us up well for FY23 and 24. So we really look forward to seeing some of these temporary one-offs just roll off here in FY22. So thank you again, and I really do appreciate your support and you taking time with us today. Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.